are in Genesis chapter 41. Somebody tell me what happened in chapter 40.
The butler and the baker went to jail.
All right. Butler and the baker went to jail. Not any specific one, just some random butler and baker.
Favorite butler and baker.
That's right. That's why they called them chief. Actually, no, it was... is actually the chief of an Indian tribe called Butler and Baker. The chief butler and the chief baker.
What tribe?
Well, the tribe of Pharaoh, of course. Yeah, she's pretty sure she was believed. Definitely sure. All right, so chapter 40, Joseph is in prison in whose house?
Pharaoh.
And the house of the captain of the guard, who, if you continue the designation, should, by all accounts, be Potiphar. And so he is in Potiphar's prison, and it is the same prison that the chief butler and the chief baker are placed in when Pharaoh becomes dissatisfied with them, for whatever reason. And so they are going to be placed in the prison, and Joseph is what in relationship to them?
He's over
them. All right. He's in charge of them. They are his responsibility. What does he notice about them when he comes in at some point in the future? We're not told how much time transpires, but they were sad. They were visibly sad. Their countenance was fallen. And so what does he do?
What's wrong?
He asks them why they're sad. And their reply?
They had a dream and couldn't find them.
No interpretation.
All right.
Didn't know the interpretation.
Okay. They had a dream. They each had a dream, and they had no one to interpret it. And that was the reason for them being disheartened. Now, which one of them tells Joseph their dream first?
Cupbearer.
All right. The butler, cupbearer. And the result of the interpretation of the dream is? All right. 3 days later, he will be restored to his original position. And as a result of hearing the good response concerning the dream, what does the baker do? He tells Joseph his dream. And the interpretation result is? Your head will be lifted up by Pharaoh in 3 days too. Right off your shoulders. All right. So, what happens at the end of chapter 41?
The dream comes back.
Exactly what Joseph said would. The dreams become a reality.
But Joseph asked the cupbearer to remember him, and he didn't.
That is correct. Joseph, after interpreting the dream of the butler, the cupbearer, told him, remember me when you are restored back to Pharaoh's house, and he wanted him remembered before whom? Pharaoh. Not just remember me to anybody. Remember me before Pharaoh. Tell Pharaoh about me. Now, it's interesting when you think about that, that would that not seem a logical thing for the butler to have done by way of just simply owing Joseph that much? Would it not have seemed reasonable for him to simply 3 days later have remembered to do that?
Yes.
You'd think he would, yes.
But it could also be the case that he was trying to be
very cautious about what he did around Pharaoh, seeing as something he had done had landed him in jail. And so in the time of trying to make sure he kept his position again, he may have...
Could be a number of different reasons. Could have been a number of different reasons why he did not. It's going to be interesting, his statement in chapter 41 as to why he did not. It's something that I had actually overlooked previously, but it is an interesting point today that we'll notice. But here's a different question. Did God tell Joseph to attempt to get out of prison? Was that God's instruction? No. Whose desire was that?
Joseph's.
Now, is God going to get Joseph out of prison?
Yes.
Is he going to not only release him, but put him in a position where he's greater than he was previously?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would Joseph have ended up there had he done it his way?
No.
Now, there would be... While Pharaoh may have taken him out of prison, said, this man's innocent, pulled him back out of prison, he would have come out of prison as what?
A free man and nothing else?
Probably would have come out of prison as a slave. Same thing he was when he went in. He was a bought slave when he went into prison. Though he was the highest in Potiphar's house, he was still a servant. He was a slave. And he would have come out of prison the same thing he went in as, a slave. Now, whether he would have been a slave to Potiphar, his social status would have been an outsider, a Hebrew, which were looked down upon by the Egyptians. They were considered to be those who were unworthy of them, and a slave. And so God's method of getting him out is much better than his method of getting him out, though he had to wait another 2 years to get there.
He came out better off than Potiphar was.
Exactly. And that is a reality. He came out better than Potiphar or his Potiphar's wife. So that's not certainly to be overlooked. So chapter 41, we'll go through and... we'll notice the questions probably as we go along. We may just switch it up. We'll see. Chapter 41, verse 1. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile. So let's again reiterate this. Who instigates this situation?
God.
God does. Pharaoh didn't ask for the dream. Pharaoh didn't decide to have a dream that troubled him. God gave Pharaoh this dream, and Joseph specifically states such. He says, God has given to you that which will come to pass. Now, it is interesting, something that was noted by a commentator that I was reading this last week, is that 2 specific times in Scripture, God gives a dream to a leader of a nation who is a Gentile. And both times, what is needed in order to find the interpretation?
A Jew
to interpret. There were no Gentiles present at either time that could interpret the dream, though the vision was given to the Gentile. He was a Hebrew. That is correct. He was a Hebrew. That is true. I'm not sure if we know if Daniel was a Jew or not.
Did they start with being called Jews?
I believe primarily it is during the intertestamental period when and it may be as early as some of the minor prophets when they come back from Babylon. But I don't believe you really see the reference to Jews before the Babylonian captivity. I may be wrong.
So what changes the distinction?
Jews are from the tribe of Judah. That's because once the 10 upper tribes are taken out, basically by that point, Benjamin has already been sucked in to the tribe of Judah. They're basically one tribe at that point, though it's the lower two tribes. The 10 tribes are destroyed by way of actually existing as tribes anymore. They never do come back as individual tribes. So the recognition of Jews comes simply from the term Judah and as descendants of Judah. And so while it seems as though, and this is completely off topic, it seems as though some from almost all the tribes do return from Babylonian captivity, the result will still be basically one nation considered as Jews. And that will be how they will be known from that point forward. Okay, back to Genesis 41. And he was a Hebrew, not a Jew. Alright. We could say he was an Israelite, too. Because he was. Now, so it's two whole years, two full years after the events with the butler and the baker. Pharaoh dreams a dream, and he was standing by the Nile. Behold, there came up out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive attractive plump cows, and Pharaoh awoke. Now, I'm going to switch back over to the New King James, which is what I normally use. I didn't realize I was on the ESV. So Pharaoh wakes up after the first dream. And the dream was, as reported here, somebody tell me what the dream was.
7 cows.
Okay. So 7 fat cows, fine looking cows, as the New King James says, come up from where?
River.
Why do you think they come up from the Nile River?
It was convenient. They were good swimmers.
All right. When you look at the geography of Egypt and you look at the topography of Egypt, does anything in Egypt, at least the Egypt of this time period, does anything in Egypt grow without the Nile River?
No.
Does anything in Egypt live without the Nile River?
No.
Mm-mm. Without the Nile River, Egypt is done. Because it is the lifeblood of Egypt. Now, the Egyptians in this time period would have worshipped the Nile River. But God is pointing out that His abundance that He is going to provide to Egypt is going to come forth from what He has placed in nature. Okay? That's not an insignificant point. That these cows arrive out of the Nile River. But here's the second thing. What's going to be in the second 7 years?
Famine.
What's the almost singular, most exclusive reason for famine?
Drought.
If the Nile River doesn't overflow its banks like it does yearly and go out into the fields and produce that water necessary for those crops to exist in Egypt, guess what doesn't happen? You don't get crops in Egypt. God is going to say, I'm bringing this abundance, and I'm bringing this famine, and your God, the Nile River, doesn't have a thing to do with it. Okay? So, verse 5. Now, what might have awoken Pharaoh so startlingly as it seems? What was it in the dream? Alright. As one person put it, if an alligator or something like that came up out of the river and ate the cows, it wouldn't be quite so disturbing. But cows aren't meat-eating animals. And they certainly aren't the kind of animals that typically eat their own. But these lean cows come up out of the river and devour the other cows. Interestingly enough. And the result is going to be quite startling. and will wake up Pharaoh. Verse 5, he slept and dreamed a second time, and suddenly seven heads of grain came up on one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, seven thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the seven thin heads devoured the seven plump and full heads, so Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. That gives you a pretty clear indication of how vivid these dreams, they're the kind you wake up and you're not sure if you're in bed or you just watch something real. Okay? God doesn't give you, you go through scripture, God doesn't give a vision to somebody that's just easily dismissed. Though with Nebuchadnezzar, he gives him a dream he can't remember. That's not the same thing as easily dismissed. It moved Nebuchadnezzar to call all his wise men in to find out what it meant and to tell him what it was. So it wasn't easily dismissed. He just couldn't remember what it was. Okay? Now, in this second dream, the seven heads of grain come up, and then a second stalk comes up with seven thin heads blighted by what? The east wind. Again, not insignificant. The east wind is talked about a number of times in Scripture, and it's something that's very specific to this area of the world in their view of the east wind. Because the east wind, almost exclusively throughout Scripture, is always considered that which brings destruction. It is the wind off the desert. It is the wind that was hot and burning and dry, and that which would cause drought and famine. But there's another fact of the Old Testament's view of the east wind. Turn to Hosea chapter 13. Hosea. Chapter 13, beginning in verse 14. This is Hosea prophesying to the northern 10 tribes, and it's their last warning. It's your last chance. You're going to be destroyed. And this is what God has to say, beginning in verse 14. Shall I ransom them from the power of Sheol? Sheol being great. By the way, I'm in the ESV again because that's where I made my note. In the power of Sheol. Shall I redeem them from death? O death, where are your plagues? O Sheol, where is your sting? Somebody recognize that statement? From where? 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Speaking concerning resurrection, Paul makes a statement, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? Talking about the fact that Christ has taken the sting out of death. But that's not what God's talking about here. That's not God's intention. He says, O death, where are your plagues? O Sheol, where is your sting? Compassion is hidden from my eyes. God's saying, you're going to get the sting and the plagues of death. Now, he goes on, he says, though he may flourish among his brothers, the east wind, the wind of the Lord shall come, rising from the wilderness, and his fountain shall dry up, his spring shall be parched, it shall strip his treasury of every precious thing. God says, the east wind, that's my wind. That's my wind of judgment. The east wind is going to be the wind of judgment and salvation. For it is the east wind that parts the Red Sea. God's east wind is that which parts the Red Sea for the Israelites to cross. And it will be that which will cease to bring about Egypt's destruction. Go back to Ezekiel chapter 17 and verse 10. Again it's stated, behold, it is planted. Will it thrive? Will it not utterly wither when the east wind strikes it? Wither away on the bed where it sprouted. So again, picture constantly through the Old Testament as that which causes drought, destruction, famine, and it's God's judgment tool. And God is going to use that east wind against Egypt and to the benefit of his nation, Israel. So
this is all subject again. So they were Israelites before they actually became a nation of Israel?
Yes, because Jacob's name had been changed to Israel, and therefore as Israelites they were descendants of Israel.
Okay. But they became a nation.
Correct. They became a nation in a sense, in God's eyes, they became a nation in Egypt coming out.
Okay.
Yes. Though the whole family is referenced as Israel earlier on in Genesis. After Jacob's name is changed, the family itself as a whole is referenced as Israel. So, the blighted, thin, destroyed by the east wind, stalks come up and they devour the thick, plump and good stalk. So in the morning, verse 8, his spirit was troubled and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh's going to get down to the bottom of this. He didn't want anybody left out. Everybody is showing up to this meeting. So, he calls all the wise men, all of the magicians of Egypt, and Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. So, it's interesting that you go to Nebuchadnezzar's day, and his wise men say, well, if you just tell us the dream, we'll tell you what it means. This dream is such, and again, this is my opinion, I wonder if God had something to do with no answers. If God held them back from even supplying a possibility of an answer. But, either way, don't know that for sure. They have no answer. They have no interpretation. And no attempt at an interpretation.
Calls them to remember his
fault. Uh-huh. So verse 9, what Grady mentions. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses this day. Now, when he says that, do you think he's talking about his offense against Pharaoh? Or his offense against Joseph?
Well, it's plural, so it's more than one offense.
That's right. So, it may be that he includes the offense against Pharaoh in the greater scheme of things as that which brought about. But it's very clear that the butler knows he has done Joseph wrong. He has offended Joseph as in he has done him evil, done him wrong. I remember my faults this day, the New King James says. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, so it happened, he restored me to my office, and he hanged him. Now, in this section, who does the chief butler attribute the interpretation to? Joseph. 2 years prior to that, who did Joseph tell the chief butler the interpretation belonged to?
God.
The chief butler leaves that out, whether he remembers it or not. But he leaves that out. He says, Joseph can interpret dreams, and Pharaoh will mention that to Joseph, and Joseph will say, no, I can't. But God can. So, it's stated here in verse 13, it came to pass just after he interpreted for us, so it happened, he restored me to my office, and he hanged him. In the butler's mind, Joseph's ability to interpret the dream was also the power to enact the dream. Now, that may have been because of his Egyptian mindset, that the power of the dream coming to pass was by the power of the one who interpreted it. But he specifically attributes the restoring of his position and the killing of the baker to Joseph.
Is that what the original says? This doesn't read that way.
Does it read differently?
It says, and as he interpreted, so it came about.
Okay.
I was restored to my office and the baker was hanged. It doesn't say in ESV that he gave Joseph credit for the actual...
All right, let me highlight that. I'll go back and take a look at that in the Hebrew and see.
What were you reading out of?
Verse 13 from the New King James. All right. Verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him out of the dungeon. And he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it, but I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. A note, you ever get called before a king? Don't go to the king's palace looking like a jailbird. Now, there's probably plenty of people that go to the White House looking like a jailbird because of the way they live. But
some of them used to work there.
Some of them used to work there. Some of them still do. But that being said, you might modernize it to say, don't go to the White House looking like somebody from Occupy Wall Street. Change. Shave.
You ever been to like any kind of court proceeding where like even traffic court?
No.
Well, look at you. it's shocking.
Yeah.
The shape that people will show up.
Even if
it's whatever the infraction, it's amazing. Jonathan, I'm sure, can attest to it. It's amazing. I'm like, dude, come on, man. You could at least like put something over top of the white beater.
Yes.
But
indeed.
The policeman does have to go in a suit and tie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So Joseph will take the time to shave, to change his clothing into that appropriate for standing before Pharaoh. And though it is significant to point out that Pharaoh will change his clothing again later. Verse 16, so Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So, you want peace of mind? The answer doesn't come from me. It doesn't come from man. It comes from God. Verse 17, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream I stood on the bank of the river. Suddenly seven cows came up out of the river, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the first seven, the fat cows. When they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were just as ugly at the beginning, so I awoke. Now, Pharaoh adds in two particular things that's not stated in the earlier sections concerning the dream. What are they?
Well, at the end, that you couldn't tell the difference.
Okay. You couldn't tell the difference that they had eaten the cows that were fatter than them and not gained a pound.
Yeah.
All right, the personal reference. I haven't seen any cows this ugly in all my time in Egypt. So, I'm just going to leave that statement. Anyway. So, verse 22. Also I saw in my dream, and suddenly seven heads came up on one stalk, full and good. Then behold, seven heads, withered thin and blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the seven good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. I'm looking for an explanation. I'm looking for an interpretation. And none of my magicians have been able to supply one. Verse 25, then Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. Pharaoh, your dream, though it happened in two dreams, one meaning. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. He says, this interpretation, this dream, is your vision of the future. This is what will happen and what God is going to do. So, first of all, Joseph makes sure Pharaoh understands the interpretation belongs to God. He, second of all, makes sure that Pharaoh understands the enactment of that which has been dreamed belongs to God. Verse 26, the seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. And the seven thin and ugly cows, which came up after them, are 7 years, and the seven empty heads, blighted by the east wind, are 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. Indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them, 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will deplete the land. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. So, Joseph gives the interpretation. He says the interpretation is 7 full years of plenty in the land of Egypt, followed by 7 years of famine and drought, such that the years of plenty will be forgotten. They will be as if they have never happened. Excuse me. And he says the dream is given twice for Pharaoh to know that it's established, there's no changing it, you're not going to adjust it, there's nothing you can do about it, and God has or will shortly bring it to pass. It's coming immediately. Eddie?
When Joseph refers to God as God, and we recognize that that's Jehovah, Pharaoh doesn't understand that, though, does he? I mean, Pharaoh would not necessarily yet be thinking a God other than the God that I know.
There's no indication that Pharaoh had any encounters nor acquaintances with the God of Israel. No.
With the word that he used in the Hebrew, maybe had a little more meaning.
It could, though I anticipate he was probably speaking in Egyptian, since he would have had enough time in Potiphar's house. Could be. Don't know. It's recorded in Hebrew, but all indications is Potiphar or Joseph would have known the Egyptian tongue by this point and would have spoken Egyptian to him. So I don't know one way or another if that is the case. It is interesting that by all indications he does not use the term Jehovah to reference God, but at least in the Hebrew I believe it would be El Shaddai. So, and that I would have to double check as well, but I believe that is what it would be. So, plenty, severe famine, the dream's established. Now, here's what Joseph gives as the enactment as far as what Pharaoh is to do, what the Egyptians are to do. And the indication is this is not Joseph's opinion. This is as well what God has delivered as far as what should be done. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. So, Joseph says, find yourself somebody who is wise and discerning. Now, it's going to be interesting, Pharaoh's response to that statement. But Joseph says, find someone wise and discerning. He does not suggest himself. That will be Pharaoh's idea. though it's a very reasonable one. He says, appoint officers over the land. So it's not a one-man job. It's find someone wise and discerning, put him in charge, put people under him, officers in the land, that will enact this in every single city. Now, how much of the grain from the plentiful years were they supposed to get? What percentage? 20%. 5 or 1/5 of all the food in Egypt that comes over those next 7 years. Now, it's going to be significant to see how abundant 20% is. Because it's going to tell us something that is a lesson even we should learn about this. And times of bounty and times of plenty and not preparing for times of less than plenty, shall we say. Verse 37. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. So the idea didn't just please Pharaoh. Everybody was happy with the idea. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Joseph says, a wise and discerning man. Pharaoh says, I want somebody in whom is the Spirit of God. And Pharaoh said, verse 39, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. Pharaoh wanted somebody connected to deity, not just somebody who was smart. And he said, this man's connected to deity.
He's like us. Nothing brings you closer to God than desperation.
Exactly.
He was desperate.
That's exactly. And with this, he's going to recognize the same thing that Potiphar did. That God was with Joseph. Joseph ended up where he was in Potiphar's house because Potiphar recognized God was with him. He ended up where he was in the prison because the head of the prison recognized God was with him. He's going to end up where he is in Pharaoh's house because Pharaoh recognized God was with him. Now, he says, verse 40, you shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. It, by way of the kingly powers alone is seemingly the idea. Will I be greater than you? But basically, your word goes in not only the house of Pharaoh, but all Egypt. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, bow the knee. So he set him over all the land of Egypt. So Pharaoh's not only going to put Joseph in a position where he's second in command, but he's going to give him every single recognition point that could be had for somebody who was second in command. The signet of the king is the power of the king. As soon as that gets stamped on anything, the full weight of the king of Egypt is behind that authority.
So it's his servant, his slave status,
and very clearly, his slave status is gone. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and with your consent no man may lift his hand or foot in, or without your consent, no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Joseph, your authority is complete, full, to be enacted. Eddie?
Do you think that, or understand that Pharaoh is looking for somebody that's going to take care of the grain and being prudent at what needs to be saved. But why does he go to this extreme? I mean, nobody shall lift their hand or put in all the land of Egypt without you knowing.
I think the idea, and again, this is my judgment, but I think the idea behind it is without Joseph, no one survives. Therefore, Joseph's authority is exhaustive and complete, only being able to be usurped by Pharaoh's. So anything that has to be done and needs to be done, Joseph will have the power to do it. All right, we will pick up there. And we weren't going to make it to chapter 42 next week anyway, because there are some things that I want to go over next week concerning chapter 41 that deal with some typology in the text. All right, you are dismissed.